Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
And you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm not joined by Mags Morrissey today. Mags is taking a break this week, but I do have a very packed show for you. Today on the show, we'll be talking to Eleanor Duggan from the Little Green Grocer in Kilkenny about fermented foods, and we'll be touching on gut health in there as well. We'll also be joined in the studio by Paul O'Donnell, chairman of the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association, to talk to us about the upcoming Introduction to Beekeeping course here in Kilkenny. And we'll be talking to Zoe Devlin about her beautiful book, Blooming Marvellous, A Wildflower Hunter's Year. It's a really marvellous book that was recommended to us by Siobhan from the Book Centre just before Christmas. We can't take any text messages or calls today, but you can, as always, get in touch with the show by email to kitchengarden@crkc.ie, or I'm on Twitter at NesbittF. Now, it might be the end of January, and God knows we've had plenty of rain recently, but there are signs that spring is on the way. In the garden, I've noticed that some of the trees are budding, and I also spotted the first crocus out at Crowan House during the week. The catalogue that Mads McKeever down in Brown Envelope Seeds, who spoke to us last week, the catalogue that she promised me arrived, and there's a fascinating variety of seeds available from Brown Envelope Seeds in there. Outside this week, I also spotted the first of our snowdrops, and I was a little bit worried about those. I'd lifted those 2 years ago from one big clump and split them and scattered them about in the little woodland garden out of Crowan. Last year, they produced no flowers, and so I was wondering whether I'd killed them in the move. But it seems they just needed to build up their stores after the move, and they're back now in all of the spots that I transplanted them to, producing those beautiful little white flowers leaning over, just an absolutely gorgeous reminder that spring is just around the corner. And the bees know that too, because I've seen the bees in action any of the mild days that we've had during the week. They're not bringing in any pollen just yet, but they are in and out cleaning the hive and cleansing themselves and getting the hive ready, I suppose, for the upcoming year, and taking advantage of any of the mild days that we've had. For those who are holding faithfully to their healthier eating plan by now, hopefully you'll be seeing some results and feeling a lot better for it. And a huge influence on how we feel is, of course, the health of our gut. And we are joined in studio today by Eleanor Duggan to talk about just that. Eleanor, you're very welcome. Thanks a million for coming in.
Thank you, Frances.
Eleanor, you're from the Little Green Grocer in Kilkenny, a gorgeous shop, one of my favourites.
Thank you.
And how long have you been down there in the Green Grocer?
We are there just over 4 years, 4 years since October.
Yourself and?
Myself and my sister, Sarah.
And what inspired you to open up the shop?
Well, I guess I've always been fascinated by food, and we both have, both myself and Sarah. And as I grew up, this fascination with food grew into a fascination with natural health. So I went on to do lots of other things, exploring this, I guess. I studied sociology with a focus on health and healing in Trinity. And then I went on and worked for learning how to grow organic vegetables in the Organic Centre for a year. And I traveled to Italy and France, learning how they grew, and always, you know, developing and learning more about where food comes from, what does it do, what does it do to our bodies, and how can we live a healthier life within the environment that we are in right now.
And you practiced for a while then as a nutritional therapist?
Yes, I went on to study nutritional therapy then, and I set up my practice here in Kilkenny and worked as a nutritional therapist for a number of years before myself and Sarah set up the shop in 2013.
And I heard you at the Be a Bug talk recently about fermented foods. And at that, you said something about food being the kind of starting point for all medicine, really. And that was a point that kind of struck me as being something that a lot more people need to kind of take on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's something that makes our shop a little bit different from other health food stores. We don't sell supplements at all. We believe that food should be our primary source of health, our primary source of well-being, our starting point, basically, because we have so much coming from food, and we have so many ways of improving our health by focusing on the very simple starting points in our lives, on our health, on our diet, and on our lifestyle. So yes, our starting point is food.
Great. Well, it's a subject that's very close to my heart. And you've brought in some food. So are these samples of the kind of fermented foods that you stock down in the shop?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we sell all sorts of different foods in the shop, but these ones specifically are fermented foods. These are foods that kind of go a little bit beyond what we would normally expect of foods. Some people might call them functional foods, but these are foods that our diets, they can really help to subtly and gently nudge our bodies in the right direction and provide us with nutrients and also with what are known as probiotics and prebiotics, which can help improve our gut health. And we are hearing so much about how important our gut health is. These are fermented foods.
Maybe we just tell people a little bit about what we mean by fermented food.
Well, generally when we're talking about fermented foods, we're focusing on the ones that have been lacto-fermented. And this means that the bacteria that are naturally occurring on a food, for example, we have a red cabbage here, and this cabbage is all covered in bacteria. And through the process of fermentation, we are creating and controlling the environment so that we encourage the growth and the production of positive bacteria, and we inhibit the growth of pathogenic bacteria. So we're creating the right conditions to preserve the vegetable, but also at the same time to provide us with an incredible source of probiotics, an incredible source of lactic acid as well, which has so many different positive effects within our bodies. So basically, fermentation is about preservation. It's been going on all over the world for thousands of years in order to make food safer for people to eat. So that's how it started. Many years ago, people wouldn't have known that they would have had such a positive effect on our gut and on our health. But they did know that fermented foods were safer foods to eat. So back when we didn't have refrigeration, you never would have had like fresh milk. Fresh milk really only started to happen in the 20th century. But before that, we would have had things like kefir and yogurt and cultured butter and cheeses, because these were ways that the food could stay safer for longer. And likewise with vegetables, people fermented their vegetables in order to have a food that was available to them in the winter, for example. When the growing season had ended, they didn't have any vegetables left, so they would preserve the vegetables using the fermentation process, so they would have something to eat basically in the middle of the winter. So that's how things like sauerkrauts, kimchi, is very similar and comes from Korea, and lots of these other foods. That's how it began, as a method of preservation. Fermentation is pretty unique. It actually improves the health benefits of the food. It actually can make the food more nutritious than the original food. So taking that red cabbage that's freshly harvested, when you turn that into something like sauerkraut, it is actually becoming more nutritious than the original cabbage. So there are more vitamins available to us in the sauerkraut than there was in the original cabbage. So for example, vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin K, they're all more available to us from the sauerkraut than from the cabbage. So that's just one way that fermented foods are of benefit to us. And that's how they started. And as we learn more and more about gut health and how we can impact our gut health, we have learned how incredibly beneficial these fermented foods are to our gut health.
Just before we talk a little bit more about gut health, because I find that fascinating, you were saying that there's more nutrition available from the food after the fermentation process. How does that come about?
So the bacteria that is on the cabbage, this bacteria uses the starches and the sugars that are naturally occurring within the vegetable. So they're pre-digesting the food for us.
Okay, so the bacteria are kind of helping us get access to the
absolutely,
stuff that's in.
Absolutely. Okay. And bacteria are incredibly important within our lives. There are actually more bacteria cells within our bodies than there are human cells. For every one human cell, there's 1.3 bacteria cells in our body. They form a huge amount of the volume in our whole body, but in our gut, they take up between 1 and 2 kilos of weight within our gut, literally in bacteria. So it's really important that we nudge it in the right direction, that we do as much as we can to create a positive environment so that the right bacteria are encouraged and the pathogens pathogenic bacteria, the ones that cause those problems, are inhibited as much as possible.
Okay, well, this might be a good opportunity for us to take a short break. Will you be able to stick around with us after the break? Okay, great. We'll come back just after this and we'll talk some more to Eleanor Duggan from The Greengrocer, all about fermented foods and the flora within our guts. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt. We can't take text messages or calls today, but you can, as always, get in touch with the show by email to kitchengarden@crkc.ie, or I'm on Twitter at NesbittF. Eleanor, we did have a question in over the break. How can we re-inoculate ourselves after a long course of antibiotics? That's a pretty good question, actually. Talk to us a little bit about the good bacteria and what it is that we can kind of do to encourage that or to support it.
Okay, so different antibiotics will have different effects. So some antibiotics may just impact certain strains of bacteria within our gut, but other more broad spectrum antibiotics can have a more broader effect then, as you can imagine. So the idea is to encourage the beneficial bacteria to repopulate. So we can do this by... You can take a probiotic, for example. You can take them in capsule form. But some research is showing that actually when we consume our fermented foods, because they contain a synergy of probiotics and prebiotics, and because they are so complex, they're a food, it's not just taking one isolated strain of bacteria, it is a whole different combination of bacteria. And each time that you consume, say, a sauerkraut or a kefir or whatever, it's slightly different from before. Like you could imagine when you bake bread, it's different every time you bake it. So this symbiosis, the synergy of the pre and probiotics within fermented foods, can really encourage and nudge your positive gut bacteria to begin to flourish again.
So prebiotics, that's something that creates a nice healthy environment for the bacteria?
A prebiotic is something that feeds a probiotic. So the probiotics are the bacteria themselves. A prebiotic is often the case of something that we can't digest ourselves. It's a fiber, for example, that we cannot digest ourselves. So it manages to reach our gut intact, but the bacteria within our gut can feed on it. So this is why it's called a prebiotic. It's feeding the probiotic, feeding the good bacteria within our gut. So, for example, some vegetables can be a great source of prebiotics. So garlic, onions, leeks, ginger, chicory, Jerusalem artichokes, asparagus, all of those foods contain fibers that we can't digest, but that our gut bacteria love, and they'll feed happily on those and begin to reproduce and begin to repopulate and flourish in a way that helps against the effects of the antibiotic that was taken in the first place.
Okay, so we're creating a nice healthy environment for them and then reintroducing bacteria, or likely kind of repopulating from within ourselves.
Yes, absolutely, because a lot of probiotics are essentially passing through, and they're doing fantastic things as they pass through our bodies, but they are passing. They don't colonize our gut. But a prebiotic can help to feed the gut bacteria that you do have, and that can help to create larger populations of the positive gut bacteria.
Okay, now these bacteria aren't just having an effect on how we digest food and on our digestive system. I heard you speak at Bia Beag about some of the studies that are showing that our gut bacteria can actually have an effect on our mental health as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They are as influential as our genes in terms of their influence on our health and on our happiness. They can influence everything from our mood, as you mentioned, our athleticism, our appetite, our emotional response, what foods we crave, how much we sleep. And this, it's really good news for all of us, because our gut microbiome, our gut bacteria can be manipulated. And if we can manipulate these gut bacteria, that means that we have an influence on our health and on our happiness, on our mood, on how we feel, our sense of well-being.
Okay, so some people might be genetically predisposed to be optimistic or jolly or happy. Others may be the opposite of that. But there's also an influencing factor in our guts. So even if you are one of those happy, jolly people, if things aren't going well inside you, it can have an impact on stress levels and your general mood. So there's things that we can actually positively do to help our digestive system and help with that kind of self-help of mood and regulation. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. One study, for example, was about a group of different women. These women were divided into three different groups. The first group wasn't given anything. The second group was given fermented milk to which probiotics had been added. And the third group had been given just regular fresh milk. And they looked at the women's brains using MRI scans at the beginning of the study and then 4 weeks later at the end of the study. And the results showed that there were no changes in the brains of the women who had had the standard milk, or on the women who had been given nothing. So no changes at all had happened within their brain scans. But the women who'd been given the fermented milk showed changes in regions of the brain that are crucial for emotional processing. So this indicates that our emotional response was altered by consuming that fermented milk. Another study showed that people who crave chocolate had different microbial metabolites within their urine compared to a group who don't crave chocolate. So
now, that's really interesting. So if you're one of those people who craves chocolate the whole time, it's probably because of something that's living inside you.
It may be. It may be because of something that's living inside you. Yes, absolutely. But this is always part of a package with other things that are going on, like your blood sugar levels and maintaining blood sugar control. But that's also influenced hugely by your gut as well. So in terms of our appetite control, and our gut bacteria can influence whether we are perceiving that we are full or whether we're hungry, whether we're going to continue eating or whether we're satisfied and we're going to stop eating, in ways that before now we thought that this was all because of our human hormones, for example, ghrelin and leptin, that influence hunger and satiety. But actually, our gut bacteria can produce mimics, can produce molecules that mimic our human hormones and can send us signals that alter our behavior. So yes, when you look at these little examples, they're just to indicate how our gut bacteria can influence our behavior and our well-being and our mood and our happiness.
So the gut bacteria can actually send signals to the brain to say eat more or
yes.
eat less or you're full
yes.
or keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. Like some gut bacteria are they're really quite good at regulating their own populations, and when they've decided their population has been fed to sufficient levels that they are satisfied, they will send a signal with these mimics, these hormone mimics, to say stop eating, don't eat anymore, we've had enough. But likewise, if there can be another group of bacteria that are sending messages saying keep eating,
all right,
when you should be full and stop eating.
Now, you mentioned some examples of these fermented foods that we can take to help us along the way. We talked a little bit about some sauerkraut, which is probably a very famous one. You also mentioned kefir. What's that?
Kefir is one of my favourites in terms of the fermented foods, because it is so simple to make yourself at home, and it is very simple to use. And it is really full of beneficial bacteria that can help to really, really, really replenish that good bacteria and nudge you in the right direction. So this would be ideal for that listener who had had the antibiotic. Kefir is one that would be fantastic for that person to take.
And it's something you can make yourself
dairy
at home or buy in the shop.
You can buy, we sell this lovely Irish organic kefir. So you can buy it ready to consume, and lots of people consume it like that because it's so convenient. But you can get what are called kefir grains and make it at home yourself, and all you need is a clean jar, put your kefir grains in the bottom, top it up with milk, and then strain it 24 or 48 hours later.
And what else have you got in the basket there of goodies from the shop that might be of help to us?
These are kind of less connected to gut health and more just highlighting the benefits of fermented food. So I've brought along coffee and some chocolate here. People mightn't be aware that these are actually fermented foods, but in these cases, this is more about the flavour of the food, about improving the flavour of the food. So fermenting coffee beans and cocoa beans before roasting them, before turning them into what we would consume, improves the flavour and can reduce the tannins and create a more desirable flavour. But in the case of chocolate, the cocoa can actually act as a prebiotic. We talked about prebiotics being the feeders of the gut bacteria. So if you go for the higher percentages of chocolate, obviously you're not going for ones laced with sugar, but higher percentages of cocoa will give you a nice way of having a prebiotic, which will feed your gut bacteria. Then looking further, we have some brine cured olives. So we talked about creating the right conditions when making sauerkraut, and salt is crucial for encouraging the growth of beneficial bacteria and inhibiting the growth of pathogenic bacteria. The pathogenic bacteria don't like salty conditions, whereas the lactic acid producing bacteria are very tolerant of salty conditions. So likewise, when we are brine curing olives, salt is used, so salty water. So brine cured olives are another source of probiotics. In here we have some tempeh and some miso. So tempeh is a soy based product. It's taking what would be completely indigestible normally, which would be a cooked plate of soybeans, and the fermentation process breaks them down and turns them into something that is much more digestible and becomes something nutritious, which we can enjoy. We have some cultured butter here too. It's an older, I guess, way of making butter, adding a culture to it as well. So again, it becomes a source of probiotics. And there are lots more too, like in Bia Biog we heard all about sourdough breads and the apple cider vinegar, which we all know about wine and beer. So as you can see from those examples, it's not always about the beneficial effects. I mean specifically about the alcohol. The effects of fermenting foods are far reaching in terms of their benefits to us, in terms of both flavour and nutritional benefit.
Eleanor, I know you were nervous about coming into the studio to talk to us today, and I'm very, very grateful for you to come in. I really enjoyed your talk at Bia Biog in High Bank, and I've really enjoyed speaking to you about this again today. So many of the products that you've mentioned are available in the shop, the greengrocer in town. Thank you so much, Eleanor, for coming in to talk to us today.
Thank you, Francis. Thanks, thank you for having me on.
And we're going to take a short ad break. And after the ad break, we're going to be talking to Paul O'Donnell from the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association about the upcoming course on the Introduction to Beekeeping. We'll be back just after these. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. And you're welcome back to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt. We can't take your messages or calls today, but you can, as always, get in touch with the show by email, kitchengarden@crkc.ie, or I'm on Twitter @NesbittF. I'm joined in studio now by Paul O'Donnell from the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association. Paul is the chairman there. Paul, you're very welcome. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Francis. Good afternoon to you.
Could you just move into that microphone just a little bit there, please, Paul, just so that people can hear you. That's great. Now, Paul, you're chairman of the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've quite a good active group. We're going quite a number of years. I took over chairman a few years ago. And we meet once a month, the first Wednesday of every month. And it's a group of probably 28, 30 people. Some who keep, most of us keep bees. Some people who don't, they just come for to be involved and hear what's going on. I know there's one member who has given up keeping bees, but she still comes to the meetings just to keep in touch. And we generally have somebody come and does a talk most months. Or if not, we organise a talk amongst ourselves or a chat amongst ourselves. We also have our own apiary out in Lavistown. And during the summer, we try and encourage members to come and get involved and open the hives with us when we're there and learn. It's all about learning and furthering people's education and furthering their experience.
All about bees.
All about bees.
That's super. And a lot of members from the city and around
about? All over, city and country. Just because you live in the city doesn't mean you can't keep bees.
Yeah.
If you don't have space yourself, plenty of farmers are quite happy to give you a corner to put them in. So don't let no back garden put you off. There's also many, many urban beekeepers. They say now the bees in London are doing better than the bees in the country in England.
My God. So I suppose they have a wider variety of flowers and stuff.
Yeah, lots and lots of flowers. I suppose what a lot of people in urban areas do if they have a flat roof to put them up on, and then they're up, they're out of the way, they're not annoying anybody.
And where does the association meet, or how often do you meet?
We meet every month in Lavistown House, which is just outside Kilkenny on the Sion Road, and it's the first Wednesday of every month. Meeting generally starts at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
So anybody who's interested, more than welcome to come along.
That's fantastic. Now this course that's coming up, it's an introduction to beekeeping.
Yeah, it's an introduction to beekeeping. It's for people who are interested to get involved and to get an idea of what's involved in beekeeping. We run it over 4 nights. It's starting on the 7th of February in the Orchard House Bar.
That's a Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, and starting at 7 o'clock. So there's 4 formal lectures, if you like, 4 class presentations. It's broken down into 4/5 topics. The first night I'll be doing the presenting, and I basically go through all the equipment that's needed, go through hives. I bring hives with me, I bring tools with me, so people get to see and hands on and get to feel and see what's involved in it. Then the next lectures are split up. We go through the occupants of the hive, break it down, the types of bees, what they do, their functions within the hive. And then the next session is a beekeeper's year. So basically we start at the beginning of the year, which really in beekeeping terms is September, when you're getting your bees ready for winter. And we go through the year from there on, and what to do and what to expect and what you should be doing. And then the last session, I know you give part of it yourself, on harvesting the honey, if you're lucky enough to get some. And we also have Eva Holmes in giving a talk on the flora and fauna. A lot of people get involved in bees or get interested in bees because they're also interested in flora and fauna and nature and stuff like that. So she's very knowledgeable and gives a very good talk on plants that are of interest to bees.
Yeah.
So even if you're not keeping bees, it's good to know what plants are of use and of benefit.
Yeah, so because let's face it, the bees could really do with some of our help at the moment.
The bees need all the help they can get, and it's not just honeybees. Wild bees are very, very important, and much more so than honeybees. Honeybees are only a small fraction of the pollinators out there.
Mm.
Our wild bees, our bumblebees, they all need forage. They all need something to live on from one end of the summer to the next.
Mm. I've often thought that Ava's talk on plants that we can put in to help the bees, even as a standalone lecture for anybody who's interested in gardening, it'd be a fascinating one to go along to.
Absolutely.
Because we could feed them for 9 months of the year if we put, you know, the right variety of plants.
Yeah, I suppose the important thing for bees is they start foraging February, March time once the weather improves, and they need forage to get them right through to the end of the year. They start sort of on gorse bushes, dandelions are very important, and they finish up on ivy, which a lot of people don't realise is ivy flowers even. And ivy is a very important crop for bees, so it's to make helps, you know, to make people aware of what bees need, what bees look for. You know, everybody, there's no harm having a dirty corner with nettles and wildflowers in the garden. That's perfect for wildlife.
Yeah, and a lot of people are fascinated by bees and the culture of the hive. Maybe people who have no intention of ever keeping bees.
Yeah, it's a community or in its own right, you know. There's a single queen with lots and lots of workers and drones, and each bee has its place. Even the worker bees, they have different functions depending on their age. First out, they become nurse bees. They help look after the others, the eggs. They feed the eggs. They feed the larvae. And then they progress on to guard bees, on to forage bees. Some bees forage for pollen, some bees forage for water, some bees forage for nectar. You know, they all have very much defined functions and roles in and it's generally they're communities that work very, very well.
Mm.
And I know there's a lot of interest through the years on you know, the whole culture of bees and, you know, trying to mirror it in our own society, so.
It's a fascinating topic, it really is. And anybody who's interested in doing the course then, do you have to already have bees, or is this for absolute beginners? Or
Absolute beginners. Most people, we ran the course very successfully last year. A few people had already had bees and they sort of came for a refresher.
Yeah.
But most people were absolute beginners.
Yeah.
Most of them had never even opened a beehive or looked in a beehive. And I suppose the beauty of our course is we do the 4 lectures, but everybody then gets a chance to put on the gear, come out to our apiary in Laverstown and get stuck in and see what it's all about.
So it's hands-on.
So it's very hands-on. I know when I did the course, a number of years ago, and my one fear was, would I be able to work a hive or would I be afraid?
Mm.
And I got the opportunity in Laverstown to go out, put on the gear, And once I knew I could do it, I was quite happy and I was able to go and invest in bees myself then.
And your own beekeeping then, Paul, you're based out in Gorn.
I'm based in Gorn. I have some bees in Gorn. I have some bees in Paulstown. I also have bees in Thomastown at the minute.
Oh, very good.
So they're well spread. I have about 18, 19 hives, depending on what gets through the winter.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a very interesting hobby. It's absolutely fascinating.
And I've seen some of your honey, I think, out in Glossary and Goodies.
Yeah, I sell my honey in Glossary and Goodies in Gorn.
Very good. Siobhan is one of the sponsors of the show, so we're always, encouraging people to go out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this last year, was it a good year or a bad year for the bees?
I had quite a good year. It was quite a good year honey-wise. The early year, the weather was very good. Beekeeping is very, very weather-dependent.
Yeah.
And Ireland being Ireland, we'd never get a full summer one end to the other without having some break for rain. And whether you get the rain, very often we get the rain at the wrong time when you're trying to get a crop of honey in, or you're trying to get hives re-queened. And, you know, as I say, the year started brilliantly last year. We had a very, very good early crop. Weather turned a little bit bad around the time when we were trying to re-queen after swarming, and I lost a couple of hives because of that. But on the whole, it was a very good year. I got plenty of honey, so yeah, I was quite happy.
And this very, very wet weather that we're having this winter, will that have an impact, do you think?
During the winter, not much so, because they generally don't stir out. I suppose the reason we get honey from bees is they produce enough surplus honey to get them through the winter when they can't forage. So really, if they can't get out of the hive, it's fine. They should have enough stores to survive. Really, it's March, April time. If the weather comes bad, then yeah, they're starting to run out of stores. Stores are starting to get low.
Yeah.
That's when they run into trouble, because they've run out of, they need to get out and forage fresh.
I did mention at the start of the show today that I noticed earlier in the week on one of the mild days, Tuesday I think it was, that the bees were in and out of all of the hives. Kind of, it looked like a bit of housekeeping was going on, a bit of cleaning.
Yeah, they do. Once the weather gets up about 10 degrees, you get a bit of sunshine, the bees will fly. They like to go out and do their business outdoors.
Yeah.
One of the first things we say in the lecture is never put your beehive close to a clothesline, for obvious reasons. But, you know, bees, they like to keep a clean house. You'll see them cleaning the muck out. And any chance they get, they will be out. And even during the middle of the winter, they'll find stuff to forage on.
I have to say, it's always very satisfying, or a bit of a relief, actually, after the winter, when you look at the hive and you see somebody coming in and out. You know, at least that hive,
absolutely.
Well, it looks like it might have survived.
When you get into beekeeping, you see them bringing pollen into the hives. Yeah. And that is always the first sign of pollen in the new year, is always fabulous, because you know the bees are alive, and you know the hive is producing, the queen is laying, and all is good. So it's a great sign.
Well, I've been keeping bees for a number of years now myself. It's a fascinating hobby, and I know every year I think, I actually know nothing. There's so much more to learn. So it's a learning experience the whole way through, really, isn't it?
Every day is a school day, and the more you know, the more you realise you don't know.
Yeah,
You know, I remember when I first got involved and first joined the association, it was great because we had mentors, we had people to ring, which again goes for this group of people. There's always somebody at the end of the phone to get, just air your worries, air your woes. And some of the best advice I got was, leave them alone, they know better than we do. You know, let them do it, don't. And when the common mistakes a new beekeeper will make is they nearly overlook at the hive, overmanage the hive. You know, the temptation is there, you have your hive, you go out and you have a peek, and but you know, you don't want to open the hive too often, because it upsets them. It takes them a while to reset the hive and get things back to normal again. So yeah, sometimes it's good just to go out and sit at the entrance to a hive and see what's coming.
You can observe a lot from the entrance.
You can learn a lot from the hive. Yeah, you'll see what's going on. You know roughly what's going on if they're from the hive. You know if it's a good one or a bad one. Absolutely.
Well, I would strongly encourage anybody who has an interest in bees to go along to the course. So it's from Wednesday, the 7th of February.
Wednesday the 7th, there's four nights in the Orchard Bar, and then, weather permitting, when the weather gets good, we'll organise sessions out in Navistown House with the apiary.
And that's every Wednesday evening for 4 weeks?
Every Wednesday evening for 4 weeks for the month of February.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, once they're involved, once they're happy to come, we have three hives out in Navistown of our own. They have to be managed the whole year round, so people are very welcome to come and give a hand. I'm always happy. I generally look after the hives. I'm always happy for somebody to come and do a bit of lifting for me.
Yeah.
And the best way to learn is get stuck in and get your hands in and see what it's all about.
Super. And how can people book themselves onto the course?
They can either turn up themselves on the night, they can contact us through the Facebook page, or there's a link on the Crone Cottages, your own website, Crone Cottages, and they can go through it that way.
And they can book online. That's 100 online. Euro for the 4 weeks.
It's 100 euros for the 4 weeks. It sounds a lot, but what it does give, it also gives membership to FIBCA, which is the Federation of Irish Beekeepers. It's a sort of an umbrella body that looks after the different organisations. So within being a member of FIBCA, the benefit are you get a monthly magazine called Ambacara, which has a various different articles. It appeals to both beginners and higher level. You know, it has Beginner's Corner every month. Mm-hmm. Goes through the simple beekeeping for people who are just starting out. And also, for very important, for when people do get their bees, it also includes insurance.
Brilliant.
So it means you're covered for any eventuality with the bees. If, just say, unfortunately, if somebody happens to walk past and gets in trouble with the bees, you can rest at ease. You're covered.
Super.
So as a part of that 100 euros, your membership of FIBCA is also included.
Okay. Well, again, I'd strongly encourage anybody who has an interest in bees or beekeeping to attend the course that's run by the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association in the Orchard House from the 7th of February for 4 Wednesdays from 7 o'clock, and that's 100 euro pay on the night, or on the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Facebook page. Or we actually have a link on the crowandcottages.com website. Paul O'Donnell, thanks a million for coming in.
Thank you very much, Francis.
And we'll be back just after this ad break. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie. And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt. We can't take text messages or calls today, but you can, as always, get in touch with the show by email to kitchengarden@crkc.ie, or I'm on Twitter @NesbittF. And I'm joined now on the line by Zoe Devlin, the author of one of my favourite books of recent times, Blooming Marvellous, A Wildflower Hunter's Year. Zoe, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
And thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
So Zoe, maybe you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we get on to talk about this gorgeous, gorgeous book. You have been into wildflowers for quite a while, I believe.
I've been into wildflowers since I was about 8, and I'm a whole lot older now. I'm well into the bus pass stage. So I've been interested in wildflowers. At first, I used to just notice them in my mother's garden because she used to grow our vegetables. And I used to, you know, go to pick the peas or whatever and see these lovely little things growing in between the rows of veggies. And I wonder what they are, because they were nothing like the flowers that were in my mother's herbaceous border. Mm. And so I got interested. And even when I was quite young, I think about the age of 8, I was given the Observer's Book of British Wildflowers, which had loads and loads of pictures of flowers, in glorious black and white, most of them. But it was enough, you know, to kind of pick a few of the plants out that were in the garden and identify them. And that really was, you know, that's what got me going. And then all my life I've followed the interest. And then when I retired from my day job, it kind of gathered steam, and I started logging down everything I saw. I'd also got a camera, because I was interested in a camera from when I was quite young also. So the two came together. And I was away in the west of Ireland with my daughter in about 2005 on a holiday. And she said to me, what are you going to do with all the photographs and all the knowledge you've gained over the years about wildflowers? And I said, well, I think I might sort of leave them on a shelf and think about it. What do you think? And she said, well, why don't you get a website going and share what you found with other people?
Mm.
So that was the start of it. I can blame it all on her.
Well, fair play to her. We've her to thank then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm a fan of the... You have a website and a Facebook page, and you're on Twitter, as well as producing these beautiful books. And the photography in this latest book, that's all by yourself as well.
Oh, yes, all the photographs in, well, almost all the photographs in the first book mm-hmm. were taken by me, apart from one that my husband took for me because it involved climbing a fence, and I'm not very good at climbing fences. But every one of the other photographs I've taken, all the flowers and things, I just love it. I love looking through the lens and seeing this, these lovely beings looking, you know, down the lens at me. There's so many beautiful flowers around, and if you just stop and have a look, and if you maybe take a hand lens, you know, a magnifying glass out with you, and you find one of these tiny little things and look at it closely, you never know, you might end up being obsessed also.
That first book that the husband gets some credit for, that that was the personal record, Wildflowers of Ireland, the personal record. That was 2011, am I right?
That's right, yes. And that had about 410 or 420 different species. And it told a little pieces of folklore about the different species. Mm. And it also, any reference that it had to history or to art, I put in there. And herbal medicine also. And then in 2014... the Collins Press also published the Field Guide. Mm. Now that has 530 species in it, and it's quite short on each of the plants, but it gives a brief description of each of the species so that if you go out and you find them, you can usually find them in that book.
Yeah.
It's categorized in color.
Now, that's one of the things that I love about that book.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because it was a bit of a risk doing it. Most of the books go by families.
Yeah.
But I reckon that when I was learning, I certainly didn't know my families.
Yeah.
That took quite a lot of time to get into, whereas I knew what was yellow and what was white.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly, when I'm out with the kids using that, they love using it because they can jump straight away to the yellow or to the blue section of the book. And then we try to find the flower that in the book that matches the one that we're looking at on the ground. So it's a really lovely way and very, very easy to use that Wildflowers, a Field Guide. And that's 2014, as you said.
That's right. I'm delighted to hear you say that. It's lovely to get a bit of feedback like that. And it's great to hear you are also bringing the kids out.
Mm. Well, they're big fans of looking down and looking up, and that's what I think these kinds of books encourage us to do.
Yeah.
It's just to take a little bit of time and look more closely at the things around us as we're taking a walk or as we're doing a bit of gardening, just like you did when you were a kid.
Yeah, it's so good for you. You know, it calms you. If you've had a bad day and you get out on a summer evening for a walk and you just look at the trees, look at the birds, you know, and nature, it really does you good.
Yeah.
I swear it does. It certainly does for me anyway.
No, I'd completely agree with you there. Now, how you break down the new book then, Blooming Marvellous, is by month.
That's right. Well, I thought it'd be useful because I reckoned it would be sold during winter, and I thought not much point in me telling people about flowers in July when it's winter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it came out just before Christmas. So I broke it down into the months, and roughly speaking, it's what you might see or what I have seen, and I have stories about the plants that I've seen in, which are out in those particular months. Now, there's not an awful lot out in January, but there are some, you know. There's quite a few little species that manage to get through the winter. And then as the spring comes, the book takes up more and more. The chapters get a bit longer because there are more flowers out during the summer months, for instance. And I just wanted to share with other people the fun I have had and the interest and the interesting people I've met and the helpful people who've told me where I might find different species. And there's a world of a lot of people out there who want to help, who want to share, and that's really what I'm trying to do as well. And I hope that book is going to hit the right spot. It seems to have done reasonably well over Christmas, I'm glad to say.
Good.
And yeah.
Well, just before Christmas, we had Siobhan from the Book Centre in Kilkenny in speaking to us about books that people might be interested in as presents for the Christmas period on gardening and food and the natural world. And top of her list was Blooming Marvellous, a Wildflower Hunter's Year by your good self.
Thank you, Siobhan. That's great. I've got a big thank you to say also to the publishers, though, because they came to me after they saw the website and they said, we think that might make a good book. This was the first book. Mm-hmm. And only for the Collins Press, none of those books would be there. They had quite an act of faith in me and, you know, they did a lovely job of all the books, particularly the last one. I think they've done a lovely job.
It's beautifully produced, Zoe. It really is. And one of the things I love about it is that it's not just about flowers. The writing is really lovely, but also it's full of lots of nuggets of the kind of information that I love, that kind of trivia on the months and where the name of the month came from and some of the wildlife that we might also see around the flowers, not just the flowers themselves.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed writing it, actually, because I'd never thought I would manage to write more than a few sentences, but it kind of took over. It took its own way, and I really enjoyed the writing. I think I might sort of try and do a bit more writing.
Very good.
I just love that so much, you know.
Very
especially
good.
A subject that you're fond of, you know.
Yeah, and there's lots of lovely pictures, including some pictures from Kilkenny as well. So I see the bridge at Inishdeag and the River Nore at Inishdeag.
Yeah, I love that part of the world. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful area. And we had a nice little adventure down there, as you can read in the July chapter.
Well, yeah. I'm trying to ration the book through the year, so I've only read the introduction in January, and I'm not allowed to start February until the 1st, so I'm going to ration it as I go. But one thing I did notice is that the flower for January is my arch nemesis out at Crowan, and that's the groundsel. It's something I see far too frequently, I'm afraid.
Oh, now, come on, think of it. It's good to have something that's going to keep flowering all year round. And the groundsel is one, you know, and I mean, there's tiny little insects depend on those flowers. So, you know, don't chop them all back.
Well, those insects have plenty of homes and plenty to eat out on my veg plot out at Crowan. In between all of the cabbages, there's plenty of groundsel out there. But right. Zoe Devlin, author of Blooming Marvellous, A Wildflower Hunter's Year, thank you very much for speaking to us on the show today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Zoe.
Bye-bye.
And people can find out more about Zoe on her website, wildflowersofireland.net. And Zoe's also on Facebook. And Zoe encourages readers of her books to log their findings at biodiversityireland.ie or using their app. And actually, I noticed that Zoe was awarded Distinguished Recorder of the Year by the National Biodiversity Data Centre just a couple of years ago. Well, we've run out of time on The Kitchen Garden for another week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter. I'm at NesbittF and Mags is at Mags Morrissey. Or you can email the show, thekitchengarden@crkc.ie. Today, I'm going to leave you with a song which I think is appropriate to the topics that we've been discussing. It's Tom Petty and Wildflower. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
run away. Go find a lover. Run away. Let your heart be your guide. You deserve the deepest of covers.